This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's February 7th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Howdy.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please text or call at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also visit me on Bicycle Talk on Facebook. If you want to listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk, you can listen on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to the show or be a guest on the show, please contact me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Going to start out with Ron's rant of the week. Okay, here's a big can of worms here. So I'm at my local food co-op this past weekend, and I run into someone who actually joined me on one of my birthday rides. I think it was probably at that time it was probably 57 mile ride or whatever. And we're talking about a mutual acquaintance that we have, who was a young boy, and he lives next door to this guy, and he said, I went out for a ride with him, and he's really strong. I can't believe how strong this guy is. And so he said, but, you know, he did something that was really annoying when I was riding with him. And I said, well, what was that? And he said, he just took off on me. Just, like, completely took off. And I finally asked him, what are you doing? It was Strava segments. Okay, so Ron's rant of the week here. Strava segments. You guys all know them. Everybody knows what this is about. I have a couple of guests here. They're both grinning at me right now. we'll talk about it in a second. So doing Strava segments on either a group ride or on a ride where you're just out riding with a friend and all of a sudden you feel like you're obsessed to go
Ron,
out.
Ron?
What?
What's Strava?
What's Strava? Come on now, this is a bicycle show. Everyone knows what Strava is.
Ron, what's Strava?
Strava is a place where you can record your rides and your workouts, and also lots of people are members of it. So you have friends on Strava. It's kind of the Facebook for cycling. How's that sound? Does that sound about right? And it tends to draw kind of a competitive group out, so to speak. So anyway, my question is, and it is on the Facebook page, doing Strava segments on a group ride, is it really necessary? Is this an etiquette problem? And I'll ask that question to my guests here in just a moment, but I have to get through a couple of more pieces of business here. And one is the on the positive side. I'd like to shout out to all the local bicycle clubs and also the clubs nationwide that are getting new riders involved in cycling, and to the racing clubs who mentor and teach people safe ways to race your bike. That will have a point later on in the show. The maintenance minute this week, checking over that cyclocross bike after a busy season. And what you want to be looking for is you want to be looking over your bike very carefully and checking for frame damage. Cross bikes can take a beating out there. They get slammed around a little bit, sometimes not when you were expecting it, and the bike can go down pretty hard. So you want to check around and make sure you don't have any frame damage. Check for dents, check for cracks, that sort of thing. Wheel damage, and also you want to inspect your tires very carefully too. Maybe they've worn out a little from the season of racing. Maybe there's some cuts or gouges in the sidewalls that you need to pay attention to. So now's the time, because it's cold outside and we're about to have some more snow here today. So it's definitely that. I have guests today. Very, very honored to have a return guest, Scott Livingston, and also Art Rohde. And they are here from a recent trip back from the Cyclocross Nationals in Reno. And we're also going to talk a little bit about Cyclocross Worlds. And let's start out with welcoming you both. Scott, welcome.
Thank you, Ron. Great to be back.
Art, first time on the air with me, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank
all
you.
Right. Not too nervous, right?
Not at all.
So I have this question that I ask everyone, and Scott's already been through this, and it's to remember what your very first memory of being on a bicycle was. Everyone on my show who's a new guest gets this question.
Well, I guess I'd have to dig back to before I was five. I was pedaling a bike, never had training wheels. But
good for
I
you.
Do have a good memory of my mom letting go of the seat on a slight downhill, and then me and the tree having a altercation.
That's great. I had one of those.
They haven't stopped.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it definitely, obviously cycling has been in my blood. I haven't stopped since then.
Yeah.
The rides have gotten longer and more adventurous.
That's great. That's great. Well, I know that I think I first met you when you were up here at UConn, right? I think you were
you're right.
A student here at UConn.
I was president of the cycling team here at UConn.
Right.
This is going back to 94, 93.
Right.
And Rainbow Cycle, your former shop, sponsored the team then.
Right, right, exactly. And how about that?
Spawned an awful lot of friendships.
Yeah, it did. It did. I have a lot of people that have come through the Rainbow Way. So, and Scott, you're here and you've got a bunch of things going on. Other than being, there we go. I lost my mic there for a second. You've got a bunch of things going on here. You are an avid cyclist. You are an avid runner. You are an avid triathlete. You're an avid, oh my God, you have like a laundry list here of things that you do, but you also own a company that makes bicycle stuff and other things too, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, Horst Engineering is in East Hartford. We spoke a little bit about that last time. It's a 72-year-old family business, and Art and I are both colleagues at the company, and that's what's allowed us to have a cycling team. Team Horse Sports just had their launch party for the 2018 season, and this is our 21st year. And in 2017, we launched the Team Horse Junior Squad, which is our CCAP-affiliated junior team. So we're focused on mountain biking and cyclocross when it comes to the kids. But when it comes to personal endurance sports, for me and my family, it covers the gamut.
You're great. It's awesome. I mean, that's why I did the positive side shout out too, because I know you guys put a lot into this. And it's really cool to see you guys out there with your kids racing. And the kids are racing bikes too. I just think it's just the best. It's something that I wish I had had when I was younger, and it's nice that you guys are doing this and getting your kids involved. And how many kids are on the team horse on the horse team?
We've got 7 on the mountain bike team and likely 9 on the cyclocross team this year.
Wow.
It's been a blast.
It's so cool. You know, there's just, I talk about this a lot on the show and with others in the industry. My industry, the bicycle industry that I'm in, has really lost a couple of generations of riders because of, we'll blame it on the electronic industry, which kind of took over our brains and minds and souls. And, we lost our kids there, and we also didn't have parents like you guys are like really active, and you walk the walk, you talk the talk, you bring your kids into it, you teach them about an active and healthy lifestyle. And without folks like you, we wouldn't see this, but we're starting to see a rebirth.
Definitely. I think the CCAP in Connecticut has really helped us. I mean, it's not uncommon to have 40 or 50 children at the Wednesday night Rocky Hill cyclocross series. there's only a couple places in the U.S. that are like that, with that kind of density of children.
We, are trying to make it feel comfortable for parents who aren't enthusiasts like us. You know, it's easy for us to commit to going to a race weekend or to go to an all-day race because we're there too for our own events. But we want to make sure that cycling appeals to parents who drop their kids off like they do at soccer practice.
Right.
And that's why, with our team, we've got a couple coaches, and they spend time talking about this. We also are, looking to recruit new children to the sport, and we want to make sure that it's fun for them without the cost being so high.
So is your pool like within the employees of the business? Or does it reach out beyond that as far as the pool of kids you're bringing in?
It's beyond that. It's most times it's children that are, children of masters racers on our team. But we've also brought people in, and we brought in A Junior, and his father is now on the team.
Oh, how nice.
So, you know, it's working both directions. And, you know, one thing I do feel obliged to mention is that a part of our approach is what other sport do the parents participate the same day as the children?
True. Good point.
And I think that, you know, helps build lifelong cyclists because the kids not only are having fun with each other, but they're having fun with their parents.
That's really cool. I never thought about it like that.
It's not just fathers and sons. It's fathers and daughters. It's mothers and sons. It's mothers and daughters. We've seen a whole mix. Our team in 2018 will have at least one girl on it.
Right. Right. Well, you see, like the Mullaly family, they all race bikes, every
right.
single one of them.
Right.
And what are there, like four kids in that family? Three kids? Four kids?
Four.
Yeah. And they're all there and they're all doing it. And, you know, I see this often at the cross races where, you know, mom and dad will be there and the kids will be racing and they'll be, you know, swapping the kid back and forth between them while one races. And then they're on the sidelines and they're cheering for them. It's just
such a cool thing.
It's really neat the way it works. Anyway, I actually have started the last couple of years. I do a little kids race, which is like, you know, nine and below, really. It's the real, real young kids. And we get kids on little scoot bikes and that sort of thing. And it's just cool.
That's great, too, because it's for the, you know, the younger sibling to participate. One thing that I saw was really cool at Hartford Nationals last year is that Timmy Johnson came over to help with that kids race.
Yeah.
You know, now somebody they've seen on TV or on the web is, you know, out there playing with them.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, we have some really good ambassadors in this sport, I think. Mm.
You get great access to the elite riders. You know, like Art said, you know, parents are racing at the same time as children, but cycling also gives you access to all skill levels. So you can show up and participate in your race in the morning and stick around and warm up or hang out and watch the elites late in the day. We've all talked about cycling being a sport of the people because you can do it and you can ride the same roads or the same trails as the pros.
Right. Right. Very cool. Very cool. So you guys, you made a little trip here. You obviously, you know, we all know about Cross Nationals last year in Hartford, and we do believe that it was possibly the most epic cross course ever designed in the United States, and because every day the race was different because the conditions changed by way of our crazy weather that we have here. But you guys went out to Reno, Nevada, and I'm like watching the temperatures, you know, because I'm obviously very interested in this and knowing what's going on. And I went and I found a couple of videos that showed people pre-riding, you know, when they were first putting the course together. I'm looking at them going, yeah, you know, it's like it's kind of out west. And I would have expected Reno because I think Reno's at elevation, isn't it?
It is. 4,700 feet.
4,700 feet. Ooh, a little thin in the lungs. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a slight headache all week.
I'll bet you did. I'll bet you did. I would expect that they would have had some weather, you know, because they're kind of high enough for snow. I know they are.
Rhodiola, baby.
Yeah, it's been a super dry year for them. I mean, the fires that ravaged California were just on the other side of the mountains, and the same weather pattern has held. So when we arrived there, we were getting heavy winds. And in some cold temperatures, it was about a 30-40 degree swing overnight where it would drop into the mid-20s. And then in the daytime, it would get up into the low to middle 50s. First part of the week, it was windy and it was damp in the mornings because there would be like a frost and then it would thaw as the sun came up.
Oh, that's interesting.
It had a lot of potential to be another epic race if it had rained more.
Yeah.
I got there about half a day before Scott and pre-rode the course in a lot of clay.
Yeah.
And so, between clay and sand, it kind of turns to cement on your tires, but the wind dried it out.
You know, I rode out west, Sea Otter Classic, you know, that mountain bike race out there.
Yeah.
I rode the cross-country course of the Sea Otter Classic when I was out there many years ago. And what I found was it was really dry. I mean, just crazy dry. Like, you know, they just don't know moisture out in California like we do here. And I'm riding along, and I'm really having a hard time keeping my tires from slipping because it's almost like there's a grain or it's like sand on top of a hard pack.
Yeah, not quite like that in Reno. You know, I mean, the park had grass, mm-hmm. You know, albeit it wasn't very green, but it was definitely grass. And even the off camber, which was quite steep. I'm sure we'll talk about that more later here.
yes, we will.
it was sticky. You know, so if it had rained, it would have been downright dangerous. By the end of the week, it had dried out, so it was, you know, it was almost slick because of the dust on top. But not like Arizona is, where you've got sand on top. And,
yeah.
You know, I raced the Cactus Cup, and
that
wasn't kind to me.
No.
Because I cornered like I was in New England.
Oh.
Reno is only 45 minutes from Lake Tahoe, and in 2017, so a year ago, when we had Nats in Hartford, there was 3 feet of snow in the same park that hosted the race this year. So weather is everything. You know,
right.
That when the organizers put their bid in a couple of years ago, they had potential for snow, rain, or dry. And it turned out to be relatively dry, but you just don't know that in advance.
Right, right. Well, you know, we could have had flood like we did this year. So
yeah,
Hartford was underwater during nationals because and ice and all that.
Yeah,
so,
and
you never know.
The 2000. So this is a unique year where there are actually going to be two national championships. There was a survey done with members of USA Cycling and a lot of discussion at the board level, and it was decided that national championships would move from January back to December where they used to be. And this year, they will be in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
So that's literally two national championships in 2018. And then the 2019 championships will be in Tacoma, Washington, but not until December of 19.
Right.
So it's just an odd year where they're pulling nationals back in. And it's going to be held at a new venue in Louisville because you may recall that flooding impacted the venue when it was the host of the World Championships.
Yes, it was a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is, you know, again, the weather wreaking havoc on a course. Later in this, in the talk here, we may touch on the World Championships, which were this past weekend, which had spectacular weather on a spectacular course. And it really is the weather that makes the race.
And
I think Reno lacked a little bit of that drama this year, but the course was still tough. There's no question about that.
Very tough course.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a tale of two courses because there was a long section of pedaling that wasn't terribly technical, and then we had the off-camber area that was quite technical.
And how steep was that hill? I mean, it
probably 45 degrees.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. You know, when you look down it, you wanted to slide off the back of your saddle and, you know, taking a hairpin corner on a 45-degree slope takes a little bit, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You watch a few people first, and then you say, all right, I can do it too.
You know, as has been the pattern in the past few nationals, there was a section that was just for the elites, the Sunday races, that they opened up, and it added a very steep run-up that the amateur riders earlier in the week didn't have to deal with, and then it added a little additional S-turn. So it was all centered on that hillside, which was up against the interstate. And that was the backside of the course where it was carnage. I mean, there was a lot of wrecks that week, even in the elite races. And it was also where we saw punctures. So the flat tires didn't play a huge role in too many of the races, but in the elite men's race, two of the fellows in the top five ended up suffering from punctures.
I saw that. Yeah, I was watching it live online, and which was fun. It's really fun to watch. But it seemed like was it like rock punctures or what was sliding
the
tires?
You know, it was actually the rocks somewhat similar to what we see in the East, where it was almost, you know, trap rock type. Mm-hmm. Sharp-edged rocks that were being exposed because, you know, because of it being wet earlier in the week, ruts formed, and there were definitely rocks in the bottom of the ruts.
Okay.
There were also some drop-offs, and then there was a ditch that many of the stronger riders were bunny hopping.
I saw that.
But not without, you know, putting a lot of pressure on their bikes. You know,
you mentioned
maintenance, check your bikes. I mean, we saw cracked wheels, we saw cracked frames. You know, cyclocross is hard on your equipment.
During one of my pre-ride laps, a guy ripped the front end of his bike off.
Oh, no.
Snapped a head tube right at the top tube and down tube. And it was a
horrendous. I mean, I shouldn't laugh. That's just
it was
a
horrendous
thing.
Crack, and he didn't get hurt, but it was just.
And he just dropped that front wheel right into that
No, it was coming out of it and just landing hard.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hmm. Yeah, we opted to run that feature. You know, yeah. We need to be at work on Monday. You know, it's one of those things. This isn't our job.
No, but you do have a story to tell. That both of you raced in this race when you went out there. You went out there for business reasons, I think, right? But you also went out there with the intentions of racing too, right?
Yeah, so back in 17 when we had the Nats in Hartford, we hosted an open house at Horst. Some of our customers and other friends of the industry came by for a plant tour to see the precision machining operation. And with the snow and the ice and the mud, it was a great week for the cyclocross toe spike product line, and which is cross spikes. And we invited the organizers from the Reno race to come and visit. Mm-hmm. They were in town to just check out Hartford and monitor the race and kind of audit it, see how things were going to go as they were preparing for a year later.
Oh, nice.
You know, and in turn, when they started to put together the 2018 race, they reached out to us and said, you know, we'd love to have you be part of the expo. Once again, they held the Mechanics National Championship.
Yeah,
which is a really fun event. They held it at a casino bar. And, of course, we did ours in downtown Hartford, and we sponsored that event. And so we supported this as well. And they were great hosts. They invited us to come out there. You know, we wouldn't have been able to justify the trip if we weren't committed to racing as well. You know, I mean, this is a niche product in the industry, just helping out. It's a passion. But we have fun doing it. So we made the trip out there. Art did three races.
Four
races.
Because I got sucked into the locals only race.
Oh, did
you? I guess I was knighted an honorary local for the week, was a hoot.
We were staying with a local, so we had an address.
Yeah. And we were able to stay with the director of operations, so that was really cool.
Oh, how nice.
But we did, you know, we sold the horse spikes, the cross spikes all week.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, we met a lot of cool people from all over, including Anchorage.
Anchorage?
Yeah.
Really?
They use the ice spikes a lot.
I'll bet they do. Yeah, sure.
Folks know us in New England, and it's not as well known out west. And again, they don't get as much mud. So there's some education when it comes to traction, but people change their tires depending on the conditions, and we're about educating folks to do the same with their toe spikes. So when we got a chance to go out there and get a feel for the scene, we met folks from all over the West Coast and just as passionate about cycling and cyclocross as we are. It was a good trip. You know, my races were the 45 to 49 year old championships. And then the single speed race, Art was in the 45 to 49s as well, which was super competitive.
Always is.
And then I did the industry race on Saturday, which is, I think, almost more competitive because you don't know who's going to enter.
Oh, you really don't. You don't know
where. There's a lot of Cat 1s that race and can do the industry race.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The single speed race was the biggest race of the week. You know,
It was
157 registrants, and I think 135 started.
You have to be kidding!
No,
it was mayhem.
It was a crazy race
in a single speed race.
Yeah, I think the next largest race was right around 100 people,
which was our 45 to 49 race.
So this is almost 40% larger, and squeezing those people onto that course with those conditions, and that's why there were a lot of wrecks.
Who would have ever guessed that a single-speed race would attract that much attention?
And again, like Art said, you don't know who's going to show up, so there were multiple national champions from prior in the week that came to do the race. It was at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, so it was the last race, basically, of the amateur schedule. All the elite races were on Sunday, and the UCI races, as they refer to them. So this was the last race of the week, and each day the course would harden up after running hundreds and hundreds of bicyclists across it. It would get hard and firm and very difficult to navigate, and they put this race at the end of the day. There was a huge crowd. I mean, the people were blowing horns and ringing their bells, and they were all crowded over on this off camber section because they're there for one reason.
Well,
right?
You exactly. know, you go to where the action is. Exactly. You know where you know you're going to see a lot of crashing and burning. It's like NASCAR, but not. You know, it's got a similar thing.
Well, the off camber had a wow factor though, because we watch guys nose wheelie around the corners.
Ooh,
I mean, Kerry Warner was doing it in practice for the
really?
Elite race. Yeah. It was the line to take if you were that good on your bike.
Oh, that requires a skill that I have no idea about.
Me too.
Wow. So did you do the single speed race too, Art?
No, I did the industry race on Saturday morning.
So it was Scott's final race.
It was. And I was so for me, I mean, we're building up to what the climax is here.
We are.
The bottom line is that I came home from Reno with a broken leg. And it's a broken fibula. It's a clean break. And starting with that race, we had quite an ordeal that's ongoing, you know. So you can't see me, but I'm wearing a pretty stout boot. I got my cast off last Thursday. And thanks to Strava, I can tell you exactly when I fell off my bike.
Oh, right? Really?
Because I was wearing my Garmin GPS, and it tracks everything. And you know, you can upload the pictures to add to the story, and I think that's the beauty of social media. I haven't been as communicative over the past 3 weeks since this happened, because the story's still unfolding. But the race started, like I said, 135 riders. I was on a brand new bike. I had a purpose-built 7 Mudhoney. Single speed, belt drive.
Very
right?
Nice.
So
nice bike.
The goal was to build a pit bike that was identical in geometry to my main race bike, which is also a 7 Mudhoney. And I wanted a single speed version that I could then race, you know, in dedicated single speed races.
Oh, sure.
So it was a race just to get the bike ready in time, and I literally didn't get to train on it or practice on it or anything.
There's a moral here.
There's a lot of little factors that have conspired to get me where I am today in this cast. And I think that certainly the new bike was a factor. People say you should never run a race in new running shoes, right?
Right.
And there's a feel to a bicycle. It needs to fit you like a glove, especially when you're doing things like nose wheelies. So you need to be one with your bike in cyclocross. And the goal was to build it identical to the 2013 cross bike I have. But parts change. It's hard to find the same set of bars. It was a centimeter off here, a centimeter off there. Needless to say, it was close, but it wasn't identical. And we had to ship them. So we shipped them, you know, using a bicycle shipping service, 2 bikes each, all the way to Reno. And built it up, and I hadn't been riding it much, you know, during the week. We were busy with the expo, and I was able to get a few laps on it, which just isn't enough to feel comfortable. And you know, the gun goes off, and
right.
I was in the third row, seated somewhere in the 30s, you know, and got through the first section of the course, got to the hill. We were riding the hill earlier in the week, but when you have one gear, you run it. You know, if you can ride it on a single speed, you've chosen the wrong gear because you're going to be spinning out everywhere else on the course.
Oh, that's a good tip.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind.
I mean,
so you dismount, you run it. My bike's super light. It's like 16 and a half pounds, titanium with a carbon fork, just a beautiful bike. And, you know, I get to the off-camber section, remount, and, you know, I'm in a train of riders sitting in somewhere in around 40th place. And I don't know really what happened after that, but it appears that my rear wheel kicked out, and I had already had my left leg out of the pedal using my leg like an outrigger, which is a very common technique when riding an off-camber in cyclocross. And I fell with all my weight on my left side, and it appears that my leg, you know, buckled under, and then I fell backwards. And just to give you the idea how steep this hill was, I was on my back and I ended up at the bottom of the hill, slid all the way to the bottom of the hill on my back. So I had a little bit of road rash on my right arm and my back. And the bicycle kind of stayed up in traffic with, you know, 100 other guys screaming down this hill, yelling, get out of the way, right? Adrenaline is pumping. I get back on my bike. Now, I knew at the moment that something seriously was wrong, but I got back on my bike. remounted and got back in line with these guys to try to get back going,
yeah,
and to chase. And I could barely move. I couldn't get my foot in the pedal. Eventually I did. And then we came to this very steep S-turn descent. And I was able to somehow get my way down that without wrecking again. And then you came around a pond that then took you around through the dinosaur park, for those of you that saw it on TV, and then up into the start-finish stretch. I actually made it another half a mile on the bicycle through the start-finish line, completing one lap. And then as we approached the stairs for the dismount, again, some of you may have seen in the pro race, there were riders actually jumping those steps.
But, I saw that, yeah.
But, you know, only a handful. The rest of us mortals got off to run. And at the moment where I went to get my left leg out of the pedal, I realized I had no – there was nothing pushing back. It wasn't – I couldn't get my leg out of the pedal.
You couldn't even kick your heel out.
No. So I had to stop, you know, kind of get off to the side, out of the way of all these people, and use my arm to force my leg out of the pedal.
Oh, that's never good.
Now, I walked up the steps and kind of tucked myself in the corner and needed to look for a course exit to get off the course because it was all tape and barriers on both sides. I eventually got off the course. I laid down in the grass. You know, the race is still going on. It's crazy with people everywhere. And I felt like that shock coming on immediately.
Yeah.
So it was a little chilly, and I was able to get back on my bike and pedal one-legged back to where the tent was in the expo, and Art was there with a customer, and I yelled to them to help me off the bike. They were both surprised to see me. I mean, we aren't supposed to be in the race. So I went over to the EMT. We got some warmer clothes for me, and they had to help get my shoe off, and all they could do was sort of just assess what it looked like. And
right.
It felt like a really bad sprained ankle, but I've had sprained ankles, so it was a little higher than that. I don't know. The trouble was is that we had an 11:30 p.m. red-eye flight home.
Oh.
And we needed to pack the bikes, pack the tents, pack the spikes, get back to the house, get all our gear ready, get to the airport. You know, it's 4 or 5 o'clock now after the race, and I'd been sitting around with my leg up. So we just... You know, despite what the naturopath might have recommended, we boarded the plane with a broken leg after walking through, you know, the Reno airport. We had a connection in Chicago, and we had a 2.5-hour delay there. And we eventually got to Hartford around noon the next day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so I didn't want to miss the afternoon races, so we set up on the couch at my house and watched the live stream of all the pro races.
Still
and
haven't gone to the doctor, right?
No. That had happened another 24 hours later. I went to work on Monday morning because I had a meeting that I couldn't miss, and eventually got to the clinic at 1. And, you know, doctor squeezed it a little bit. I screeched a little bit, and he said, let's take a picture. So... came back and he showed me the picture and says you broke your fibula.
Yeah, and you posted it on Facebook.
Yeah,
I saw it and I went, that's like a clean break too. We're not talking about a little like crack fracture type thing. You just broke it.
I don't know what were you thinking as we were walking through the airport.
I wasn't super concerned in Reno because I know that you can muscle your way through things. But when we got to Chicago, one, he had to take a rest between gates, which is not normal,
right?
And then he says, wow, it takes my breath away every time I take a step. I'm like, I guess practicing nose wheelies on the course during the race isn't a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, looking back, I mean, for Fran's benefit, I've done a lot of research about the risk I took, and my PCP weighed in explaining what deep vein thrombosis is all about and the risk of blood clots flying with that kind of swelling on an aircraft. And, you know, you'd think that I was smarter than that. But when your adrenaline's pumping and, you know, you've got a whole plan that is now unraveling, you sort of forge ahead when you're a knucklehead like cyclocross racers are. And especially,
I mean, so the real thing is that the EMTs at the race asked him what his pain level was, and he said 6 out of 10.
Oh, my God, you're kidding.
And I'm like, you know, in retrospect, it's like, if that's a 6, I don't want to know what 10 is.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to know what 10 is. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's been a fun experience. I've gotten some good care since my return, and I've learned quite a bit. and still trying to piece together what actually happened, but it was my last race of the season, you know, 25 cross races from September through January. And now the goal is to get back, so I'm racing this September. I'm sure I'll be back before then, but I've had to postpone a bunch of planned activities. I missed a couple trips, and now I'm just convalescing.
So, Scott, this is a test. Okay?
People, Scott fell. Scott's leg really hurt. Scott didn't go to the doctor before he flew. Scott risked his life. Scott found out he had a fracture. Scott could have died. Don't be like Scott.
Yeah, Fran, thanks for the public service announcement.
I was going to mention something about, you know, you can't see it because we're on radio here. And if you could have seen the eye rolling that was going on across the way here with Fran. But she just
don't matter.
She just gave it to you.
I could feel it from across the table here. And we'll make sure that we edit out this portion when my mother listens to the podcast.
It's up to Ron.
Yeah. You know, so cross is boss, you know, life, yep. Death's like a cross. I mean, we add those hashtags to all our posts.
Do you really? You put that on
the... Oh, yeah.
Life,
that's
life, death, and cyclocross.
Exactly. That's the final hashtag of every marketing post we put out there. It's very common. I mean, cyclocross is a unique breed. And, you know, that's what made the race here in Hartford so fun and entertaining. It's a passionate crowd.
It really is.
It is. It's great. You know, I just... People come to it that have never been to it before, and they walk away, and they just shake their head and go, oh, my God, I can't believe. For, you know, and the thing is, you know, a cross race is what, 45 minutes to an hour. That's what you're doing. That's all there is to it. It's not that long. It's not like you're going out and doing a road race where you're going to be sitting in the saddle for 4 hours or longer. It's just this brief, unbelievable, pedal-to-the-metal activity where you're I mean, if you're not tasting blood in your mouth from pedaling, from breathing that hard, you're just not going hard enough.
So that makes me reminds me of my very first cross race in 1992.
And where was that?
That was at Dartmouth College.
Okay.
Scott was there. Mm-hmm. Aaron Ofsiani was with us.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I pushed my lungs so hard that I had hiccups the entire drive back to Connecticut.
Really?
Wow. Now, what's it like to be in a van of 20-somethings that are highly caffeinated and you're sitting there hiccuping the whole time?
He was
I was addicted.
We got hooked.
You know, so we have some hardcore folks here on the air with us today. You know, I can only say that I have done the same thing, so I certainly know. I have a story of coming back from a cross race. It was up in Massachusetts, and I had my roommate in the car with me, and standard transmission, and my legs were so just completely screwed from the race because they were just cooked. They were just completely cooked. I couldn't lift my leg up to put it onto the clutch to operate the clutch, so I had to use my hands in order to do that. So I'd reach down and grab my leg and put it on, and my roommate and I'd say, ready, set, and I'm steering the steering wheel with my other leg, and I'd say, and go, and he'd shift. And then we'd drive down there, and then after that, there would just be this burst of laughter between the two of us, because it was like, I can't believe we pushed ourselves so hard that, you know, this is how I have to drive my car home.
Yeah. Well, that may be a good segue to Worlds this past weekend. And the under-23 women's race, Evie Richards from Great Britain pushed herself to the point where she just collapsed after the race was over.
Yeah.
She had some challenges where she couldn't shift, and I'm sure that made her really dig deep to ensure that she won the race.
Yeah.
But to collapse like that after a 40-minute effort.
And that's the thing. It's not like you're doing a 10-hour triathlon.
No.
It's we're talking about 40 minutes, 50 minutes, that's it. Yeah. But it is just so flat out. And, you know, I've got someone I'm meeting next Monday, and she wants to get into bike racing, and she's a tough woman. She's a real tough woman, and she's really fit, and I'm shaking with excitement because I can't wait to introduce her to this because, you know, I mean...
And she's so cute!
And she is cute. She is cute.
We make it sound like it's a grueling test, but remember, we started our chat today talking about the juniors and why cyclocross is such a great way to introduce them to cycling. You're in a park. It's a safe atmosphere. You can race at your level in your category, and if you get lapped three times,
it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, those of us that are competitive and, you know, going to the national championships, we come across like we're hardcore, but there are local races where you can just go out and try it on any bike that you want to pull out of your basement, and that's the beauty of it. You know, watching the world championships this past weekend, that's at the sharp tip of the spear, as they say. You're talking about the best of the best. There were 25,000 spectators on that Limburg-Valkenburg course in the Netherlands, and that's actually a pretty small turnout. I mean, if it was in Belgium, they would have gotten twice as many, and it's only an hour away. You know, but being in the Netherlands, there isn't as big a passion for the sport, but still large compared to what you have here in North America.
People who I've talked to who have gone to a Belgian race and watched a Belgian race say that the crowds are 10 deep on the side of the course, on both sides.
Yeah, and this race was a spectacle. They had tremendous mud. Each night it snowed a little bit, leaving moisture on the course that would just soak in when the sun came up. And it was that pattern for like the whole week leading up to the race.
Right.
And the course was just a quagmire.
Yeah, and extremely hilly on top of it. So,
yeah.
Made for an awful lot of running.
It was a lot hillier than a lot of the Belgian courses I've seen in the past. I was kind of surprised. I actually thought it looked really cool that they really, you know, they dialed that one in. And it reminded me of, in my harsh opinion here, of Real Cross. And not that the Belgians don't have Real Cross, but their courses have become flatter and faster over the years. They're not as difficult as they were years ago. But then again, a lot of the race courses are like that now, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Even here.
Yeah, I mean, they was so hilly at the World Championships that they didn't even have a set of barriers. There was really no need. There were so many other natural dismounts on the course.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, at the Reno Nats, there was one set of barriers. And again, the best of the best were bunny hopping them. When you have a fast course like that, it seems like almost any obstacle can be jumped by these top riders. They're and even some of the women now practicing,
absolutely,
and proving that dismounts are not always required.
So you guys bunny hop or you dismount?
We're runners.
Not yet.
Yeah, you know, you laugh. I mean,
my son has vowed to learn how to bunny hop, and we've watched a few juniors, including one on my junior team, that have figured it out.
Right.
10 and 11, 12 years old.
I know.
These barriers are 16 inches high, so it's pretty substantial for a young child to pull that off.
It is, you know, and I get criticized for the barriers. There's too many barriers. I hear that on my races that I put on, and you know, I have three barriers. I mean, come on, it's not too many barriers.
Well, that's old school, but we don't mind.
But, you know, and then people will say, oh, those barriers are kind of high. Have you measured those barriers? My barriers they're like 15 inches. They're not 16 inches. I've got an inch to play with, and they're really durable. So you can actually, you know, hop them and tap on them so that you're not going to knock them over or anything. And But I just watch some of these people bunny hopping. The first people that ever bunny hopped my barriers at Mansfield were the McCormick brothers. And they were juniors at the time. And I looked at that and I went, boy, I got to make some adjustments. We can't have this happen.
It's all in the spacing.
Some of their kids are now racing and competing at a high level. That just goes to show that was a while ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I mean, New England had a great showing out west at the Reno Nats. And we even had some of our local riders competing in Limburg at the World Championships. You know, Stephen Hyde was the top-placed American in the elite men's race. I think he was
15th.
13th?
15th or 16th.
15th. Yeah, 15th. He won the national championships.
Yeah.
You know, and the nationals race was just one of the most entertaining
It was a great race.
Of all time. You know,
it was a great race.
Battle royale between the top cross riders, and it came down to Jeremy Powers and Stephen Hyde, and they just put on a show.
And they did, and they were both, like, pretty much flat out. I would say they were both feeling it really badly on the last two laps. You could see the hesitation in their stroke and the way that they were navigating through. But with two laps to go, I called Stephen Hyde because I watched him go through that steep downhill off camber, and Jeremy was just – he was starting to tap out a little too much, and you could see where he was having a little bit more trouble containing his bike handling skills there. And so Hyde just he made a great move at the right time, you know, attack just before there. This is what the cross is all about. It's all about thinking about knowing what your competitor is like, sitting on their wheel for a little while and understanding where they're, you know, if you want to race cross, if you want to learn how to race cross and you want to get good at it, when you get to the point where you're in an elite group of, let's say, six or even if it's a you know, someone you see at the race every weekend, you need to sit on their wheel, be patient, sit on their wheel and watch them and see where they make their mistakes, because those are your areas that you can attack. So that's a little strategy, but there's strategy in everything. But
well, I think that, you know, one of the best things about the elite men's race and also the women's race at Worlds was that it was a group of five. It got whittled down. It wasn't
right
what we've seen all year with the World Cup races where Matthew Vanderpool just rides away and wins by a minute.
yeah.
You know, and Katie Compton and Sana Kant had quite a battle that
ultimately
came down to who was more less tired, I guess,
right?
They're both knackered at the end.
Yeah.
You know, they put on a great race, and, you know, that's what gets the kids inspired. And then to be able to go to a race and see Katie up close, you know, that's the beauty of it, is because you're racing amateurs on the same course that the top riders in the world compete on.
Sure.
I think accessibility is a good thing there, too, you know, whereas you can walk up and talk to Katie, hang out with Stephen Hyde.
Right.
And it's there. You don't get that in pro baseball.
No. Jeremy Powers is very approachable. He's not a problem either. You can talk to all of these people, and they don't have too much trouble with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in Reno, we helped out Richard Sachs. You know, he's a mutual friend.
Sure.
You know, longtime presence on the cyclocross scene here in New England, and, you know, frame builder in Connecticut. But Richard was out there, and, you know, he didn't end up having the race he wanted to have, but he also agreed it was a good experience. And, you know, he was out there racing in the 65 to 69 category, right. 60 to 65.
60, I don't remember.
I mean,
which,
he needed to say 60 plus.
I think 60 to 65. I think he's my age category.
It's great to see these Masters riders, you know, pushing right on into their later years.
Oh, I know. They keep asking me to come back, and I keep going, but wait a second. You guys are, like, at a way higher level of fitness than I am. I mean, I just, to be that fit, to be able to race at that level is not an easy thing.
And just to show up, I mean, you look at Julie Lockhart, who has been doing it for years, and she's the current, 70 to 75 national champion, or 75 to 80 national champion.
Yep.
I mean, that's fantastic to see 8-year-olds and then 80-year-olds on the same event.
Yeah, I think Fran did a criterium with her. I think. Did you know?
Oh, that's that woman she races for, what is it, IBC or something?
It's a Massachusetts-based shop.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they have a red, white, and blue kit.
Red, white, and blue kit.
Yep. Yep.
Yes, and we were watching the Nationals footage, and I said, I know her.
Yeah.
I know who you mean.
Yeah, she's a multi-time national champion, and she won the race in Hartford when it was here. So,
that's right.
I mean, it's great to see folks from New England travel and have these results. I think Lane Mayer was the top place junior, fifth place.
Yeah, I think fifth place.
Fifth place. Yeah.
He's from Connecticut.
Harwinton, Connecticut.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty amazing, huh?
So the future's bright for cyclocross. You know, the CCAP is just about getting kids interested, and then you can go to the next level from there.
So if you're listening to this and you want to get your kid involved in bicycle racing, here's where you start. Start with cross. And I say this all the time, and I'll say it again, and it is the reason I love cross is, A, First of all, you don't have to deal with the cars. You're contained. You're off-road. You don't have to deal with any of that. B, you teach skills. And those skills will carry over to wherever they go if they want to continue to go on and race on the road. Same thing with mountain biking. It's the same thing. You learn the skills. You learn what happens when your bicycle starts behaving in a manner of which is not predictable. And you have to learn how to correct. And really, the patience part is you have to learn to, Fran's going to laugh when she hears this, do not fight with your bicycle because your bicycle will always win. And it's,
he says that a lot.
I do say it a lot.
Sage advice.
Yeah. You know, one other aspect for the kids that is wonderful, too, is, you know, I've often said to folks, the after race is just as important for the kids as the race.
Mm-hmm.
Because they get to hang out all day while we're racing. You know, they go out and screw around, and next thing you know, they're wheeling or bunny hopping barriers or building jumps.
Playing in the dirt.
And it's a safe environment. They're having a blast, and they know when it's time to come back, they come back.
And look at the skill. Look at the skills they're getting out of this, too. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's truly amazing.
I think you shared with us this morning that the 2018 schedule is in its draft format, and
I sent that over to you on an email.
So come September, folks will be back at it. You know, the mountain bike season starts here in the next 45 to 60 days.
Yeah, first week in April.
Yeah, so it's here already. You know, some of us have a little longer road to go this year, but the kids will be ready.
All right. Well, we got to wrap this up. Boy, that went by quick. We could do this again. We could definitely do this again. My guests today have been Scott Livingston and Art Rohde. They're here from Horst Engineering, which makes cross bikes, which is a really cool thing. We didn't even get to that. We were just talking about bike racing and biking. They were here today to share some of their reflections on the cross nationals that were in Reno, Nevada. Thank you very much for coming in today. Really appreciate it. And we will do this again soon. We definitely will. I have a couple of upcoming events here. I'd like to mention the North American Hand-Built Show is coming to Hartford, Connecticut. You can find out more about that by going to www.nahbs.com. And you're going to find it's the world's largest show for custom-built handmade bicycles. And it takes place in Hartford, Connecticut, February 16th through the 18th at the Connecticut Convention Center.
You going to have a show on that
hope
topic?
To see that. I'm going to be there with a mic, okay. And I'm going to be doing remote reports every day is what my plan is, and posting them onto Facebook. So I'm borrowing some equipment here from the radio station, and I'm going to be making recordings every day. So,
cool.
Yes, I will. I totally will. And, you know, I know a lot of the old-time builders like Richie Sachs and Peter Weigel. I used to paint for them, so I know them from way back. But Chris Chance, I think, might be there.
I'm hoping so
because I haven't seen Chris in a long time. You know, Chris grew up here, right here in Storrs.
Right.
He's right from this area. So anyway, that is Saturday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 16th, 17th, and 18th of February in Hartford. So check that out. There's also going to be a special women's seminar there that I just got a memo on from Bicycle Retailer. So you might want to check that out. On the 5th through the 7th of March in Washington, D.C., we have the National Bike Summit. And the National Bike Summit is a premier bicycle advocacy event of the year, uniting voices of bicyclists at Capitol Hill. This year's theme is Grassroots Grow Together. And they'll be showcasing successes at the local level, learning how they happen, and exploring ways to expand their reach. So that'll be a cool thing. There's a lot of workshops there, pretty cool stuff. And then another thing on the list here that I have is on Friday, April 6th, 2018, from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., bikewalkconnecticut.org, if you want to get there, bikewalkct.org, is having their annual summit, and it will be at the Lyceum in Hartford at 227 Lawrence Street, Hartford, Connecticut. And you can go on to bikewalkct.org to find out more about that. My name is Pedalin' Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can reach me by emailing to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.